So speaking of announcements, the most important announcement in the history of Makuen Cause coming up a little bit later in the program.
Yeah, and that's right.
I have a new concept for how to end the show.
Okay.
Matt doesn't know what it is. I know what it is.
All right.
But you'll have to listen to the end and see if you get the reference. I am dropping the ultimate Easter egg at the end of the podcast.
Very, very exciting.
All right. Should we do our top fives though?
Yeah, absolutely.
All right. So with Evgeny Malkin winning the cup, and having a great series and just generally a great career. He's probably, I think inarguably, except from Matt, who thinks Letang is better by some crazy notion.
No. I'm saying last year. You know what the main thing is last year in the playoffs, I thought Letang was more important for Pittsburgh than Malkin. They had Crosby. They had Kessel.
What was that little fish sound you made?
Well, that was my
fish in an aquarium.
It was my self-satisfied. You know, I got you in a corner,
Matt. In an era of self-loathing, you are the most least self-loathingest person I've ever met.
That's right.
By the way, before we dive into this top five, Matt was championing Graceland by Paul Simon on Twitter yesterday.
Yeah, top 10 greatest, one of the top 10 greatest albums of all time.
If greatest means pretentious, then I agree with you.
There's nothing pretentious about it. Graceland is such a beautiful mix of musicians from all over the world. It is. I will not hear anyone saying that Graceland is one of the top 10. And the problem is I can't fight you on this. You know so much more about music than me.
You know what? It's like you're going after Aquaman and saying, I'll lure him into the ocean and get him there.
Yeah,
Matt,
exactly.
I will simply say this. Graceland is the perfect reason why God needed to create Metallica.
Listen, there's plenty of room for Metallica there. You know, music snob.
I could get a little snobby. All right, exactly. So we're going to look at doing our top five Robins in honor of Evgeny Malkin, who's always going to be Robin to Sidney Crosby's Batman. Mm-hmm. Last week, we did. I did the top five,
yep.
But I found I didn't like it because I worked really hard to get the list just right, and you kind of agreed with it.
Yeah.
And I thought, well, that was unsatisfying. Well, and I worked really hard to get it right. It's so much easier to just sit back and criticize your hard work.
Yes, it is.
So why don't we do that?
All right.
Top five Robins, Maddie.
Top five Robins. Coming in at number five, Richard Dent.
Ooh.
Everyone thinks about, the Bears defense from the 80s is one of the greatest of all time. And everyone remembers first Mike Singletary.
Right.
And after that, the next person you think of is probably Buddy Ryan or Mike Ditka. But Richard Dent, not only four-time Pro Bowler, five-time All-Pro, he was the MVP of the Super Bowl. No one remembers. See, that part of me is the sidekick role is sometimes you get overshadowed. Everyone remembers, the fridge scoring from 1 yard out, or before the game, Jim McMahon, mooning, traffic copters. So my number five is Richard Dent, Hall of Famer, Super Bowl MVP.
And Matt's going to go through his top five in ascending order, and at the end of it, I will weigh in,
yes.
Which is already forming itself as a critique. I'll warn you now.
His pen is furiously scribbling. Here's how good this list is, Bob.
Okay.
At number four.
Mm-hmm.
So everyone's number one, Scottie Pippen.
Okay.
Six-time NBA champ, seven-time All-Star, eight-time All-NBA defensive first team. He was the quintessential Robin to Michael Jordan's Batman, one of the greatest defensive players of all time. And if people would want that higher, I get it. But you got to stick around, people.
Okay.
Because this list is
I like
so
this.
Hot.
No, this is good. This is a bold move.
This list is so hot.
This is like killing off Janet Leigh's character in the first reel of Psycho.
Exactly.
Right?
Like, yeah.
What? She was supposed to be the final girl. It makes no sense. Matt, you've completely distorted the narrative of this. I love it. You're going nutty.
Steven Seagal dying in executive decision. Samuel L. Jackson dying in Deep Blue Sea early on. Spoiler.
By the way, can we take one brief moment and salute that moment? Oh. One of the best moments in shark movies ever.
Yes.
We're not gonna argue anymore.
Oh.
And just the terrible CGI shark comes out of the tube and eats him. I didn't see that coming the first time.
No, neither did I. By the way, Deep Blue Sea is awesome. I will fight anyone who does.
Saffron Burrows has to escape the shark when the shark is swimming around the room and she's in the old pantry.
And she's got to strip down into her bra and underwear.
Maybe my favorite moment of unnecessary cheesecake.
And just like, I got to take my wetsuit off because I need that extra couple inches. Like, bravo.
Well, no, she had to stand on her rubber wetsuit.
Yeah, rubber wetsuit.
Because it would keep her. It would be a buffer between her and the electrical current that she was putting through the water to electrify the shark. So there was actually a scientific reason for doing it.
Okay, was that the reason? I mean,
that was the reason.
Okay.
No, it wasn't for the extra couple inches.
No, because it was in the shark was in the locker room
Was right, but she electrified the water. Remember, because she ripped the wire out of the wall.
Oh, okay, yeah. Okay.
By the
okay,
way,
okay.
If you haven't seen Deep Blue Sea, and if it's this isn't so enticement good. Enough,
yeah. Not that we are like again, whoever those the horny producers are, you guys have no shame. Coming in, speaking of no shame, my number three top five sports Robins of all time, Julian Washington. Do you know who that is, Bob?
I don't, Matt. So it's impossible that this could be right, but please continue.
LL Cool J in Any Given Sunday. I'm going to give you a quote from Any Given Sunday when he is complaining about the offense changing. Quote, Reebok's got this ad campaign ready to go the moment I hit 2,000 yards. 2,000 yards rushing? Do you know how hard that is?
Pretty hard, man.
In the NFL. Do you know how many times that's happened? You know, Jamal
is
Lewis.
It twice, right?
Jamal Lewis did it. O.J. Simpson
Eric
did
Dickerson
it.
Did it.
Eric Dickerson. Three
times.
People. And this is on an offense that clearly had two great quarterbacks in young Willie Beeman and in Bridges, the older Dan Marino-esque quarterback. So yet, despite having these great wideouts and these great receivers, that Sharks team had a 2,000-yard rusher. That, you know, they won a playoff game. He scored a touchdown. He was big in that game. So Julian Washington, LL Cool J, Any Given Sunday, number three.
Matt, no,
my
Matt,
top five
no matter what
Robins.
Happens next, I slow clap. That was really great. Wow. Did not see that coming. That was good.
Coming in at number two, Kobe Bryant.
Mm-hmm.
From 2000 to 2002, who was the finals MVP? It was Shaq. And it wasn't until 2002 when Kobe finally made, and he was already great, he was a great player before, we all know that, but 2002 was the first time he made first team All-NBA. When they won the titles in 2000, 2001, he had yet to hit his peak of powers. Now, Shaq in the regular season would have been a far better player, but he was just lazy and chubby. But come the playoffs, when it was time to destroy everyone, Shaq went in full Hulk mode. So I know people think it's crazy to have Kobe Bryant, but Kobe Bryant, number two on my second banana.
I actually think that's a really good pick. And let me just say this now, because I know I'll critique it later.
Yeah.
But that is a really good pick because that broke up the Lakers. Think if they would have kept that team together, then Phil probably could have had another six rings with another great duo. But I don't think that Kobe could handle being Robin, and some guys can.
Yeah,
Russell Westbrook and Kevin Durant, example probably number one. I'm assuming Westbrook's going to be your number one.
Good God, no, number one.
Okay, who's your number one?
Number one, the only guy that I can think of that was incredibly productive mm-hmm. as a second banana.
Okay.
For two different championship teams.
Okay.
And by two, I mean an Oilers team led by Gretzky and an Oilers team in 1990 led by Messier. Talk about Jari Kurri. 8-time All-Star, 5-time Stanley Cup champ, just over 600 goals, just under 1,400 points. Second bananas. And again, sometimes he was the third best player in Edmonton with Messier and Gretzky, but on a lot of nights, he was the second best player. And what I loved about Kurri is Gretzky leaves and Kurri just continues that role with Messier to beat Boston in 5 games in 1990 in the Stanley Cup. So number one for me, Jari Kurri.
I like your list, Matt. I didn't hate it. I thought I would hate it. It started off pretty sloppy, but you had some. This Julian Washington pick was inspired. Yes. I'll give you that.
Thank
and
you.
The Jari Kurri pick was pretty good. Mm-hmm. Although I think if you're going to go for a hockey Robin, mm-hmm. it's got to be Jaromir Jagr going back to 91 and 92, where he's playing behind Mario.
Yeah. Yep.
Because as great as Jagr was, he was never going to be accepted at Mario's level.
Yes.
And he really wasn't at Mario's level. But as you look back at how good he was,
oh, yeah.
he was an absolutely and utterly dominant player. So I kind of like that one better than the Kurri one. Because I don't know that Kurri on his own would have been a great player.
Oh, no. Jagr was a better player than Kurri. It just, to me, there was something interesting about Kurri that continued that role. Because when Gretzky leaves a team, it's like it's a new team,
mm-hmm.
you know? And so here's this new team without Gretzky, and people are wondering, you know, what was going to happen? They still win the cup. And Messier was, you know, was obviously incredible that year at 129 points, but Jari Kurri was second with 93.
So, Matt, I'm going to just go. I didn't hit your list. I thought it was interesting and creative. Now, I think you missed some historical examples that
were
better. Of course.
So in top five, you're going to have people left off this list.
Including, I think, the number one mm-hmm. of all time, the greatest Robin ever, Lou Gehrig. Lou Gehrig behind Babe Ruth.
I didn't want to do it. I wanted to keep something...
Sacred?
No,
Matt,
no.
Consider
no,
this.
Slightly modern.
When Ruth hit 60 home runs in 1927. Do you have any idea what Gehrig's line was that year?
It was ridiculous.
He hit 373 with 218 hits, 52 doubles, 18 triples, 47 home runs, and 175 RBI.
I know.
That's a pretty good season.
I believe it.
But what do we talk about in the 1927 season? Ruth's 60 home runs.
Yeah.
The idea that you could be Lou Gehrig, that great a player, and have to live in the shadow of Babe Ruth. I mean, come on. He's got to be the number one Robin of all time, right?
I get it. You know, my list, you know,
it's always been Ruth and Gehrig. Yes. Has it ever been Gehrig and Ruth?
No. Oh, right. No. I mean, for my list, I wanted it to be slightly a little bit more, I want to say modern, because Richard Dent, they won the Super Bowl in 1985, but I kept things to color TV.
How about this one? How about Curt Schilling, who had to be Robin twice? On the Arizona Diamondbacks, he was Robin to Randy Johnson.
Yep.
Randy Johnson wins the Cy Young, and who's second in NL voting for the Cy Young?
Yep.
Curt Schilling. Then he goes over to Boston, and you could argue that maybe this isn't the case, but he's playing Robin to Pedro, Pedro Martinez. So not only is he Robin on one team behind one Hall of Famer, he goes to another team in another league and has to play second fiddle to another guy.
Yeah, I mean,
you don't see that very often, where you play that same role twice to two different people.
You don't. I would say at that point, Curt Schilling was better than, or at least was more productive.
Yeah, he's probably more productive than Pedro. But Pedro was such a folk hero by that.
Oh, of course. But Pedro by that point was Who's Your Daddy and was being owned by the Yankees, by the Yankees home crowd.
I'll grant you that. My other one that I really like is Don Drysdale, who was a right-handed pitcher for the Dodgers in the late 50s and early 60s. He won the 62 Cy Young Award. He threw six consecutive shutouts and 58 and two-thirds consecutive scoreless innings and had to play second fiddle to Sandy Koufax. Because Drysdale was one of the great pitchers of his day, and Koufax is one of the two or three best left-handers in history. So I think when we're talking Robins, big picture, I go with that.
All right. Yeah, right. Listen, all of course, worthy.
Richard Dent was actually a pretty bad pick.
No.
Pretty bad pick. But you made up with it with your Any Given Sunday pick, so.
My problem with Lou Gehrig is just, I wanted something a little bit more modern. And the Bears, I mean, that was the oldest one I wanted to go with. Part of the thing about a second banana, I wanted a guy people didn't recognize. I wanted to shine some light on someone whose name probably doesn't get as much attention. So I went with Richard Dent.
Amazingly genteel top five. Maybe our least contentious.
Well, you did do the condescending. Matt, you know, I don't hate your list. Oh, thank you, Bob, for granting.
Yeah.
No, but you said that line like you were presenting me with a birthday gift. Oh, Matt, here you go. I don't hate your list. You're welcome.
Hang on, Matt. I'm going to tear up this piece of napkin right in front of us.
Yep.
And I'm going to write you a little note.
Oh, okay.
Participant ribbon.
Oh.
You did great, little buddy.
Yes. Terrific. Yes.
By the way, someone asked if you were Robin to my Batman online. Yeah. 100% no. 1,000% no. Matt and I are total equals. And then someone else weighed in and said, well, could they be more like Batman and Joker?
That
is 100% it.
That could be it.
There's a love-hate, you're trying to destroy me and I'm trying to destroy you relationship.
But yet they need each other.
And love each other, oddly, right? Yes. Because they are the photo negatives of each other.
Yeah.
These weird loners with a twisted sense of being outsiders that are trying to fit in any way they can. One by destroying and one by saving.
That's a good point.
You and I are literally opposites.
But
literally opposites.
Which one of us is Batman? Which one of us is Joker?
Now, we know that I'm Batman. Matt, my voice is low. I'm humorless. I sit by myself all night long.
I would argue at the opening of the most recent time we saw Batman, Joker in the opening scene was riding the bus and had crazy hair fighting a rich guy in his lair.
I took the 504 streetcar here and I had my daughter's pink headphones on.
Yeah.
From her little My Little Pony setup.
Seems kind of jokery to me.
Yeah. You know who thought it was not a good idea?
Mm.
Everybody who sat near me.
Everyone
who's the guy listening to Metallica on the My Little Pony headset?
I think we rotate between who is Batman and who's Joker.
Okay. I think that's actually that's pretty, pretty fair.
Considering I have six bottles of wine that I was planning on taking up to my cottage before getting called in for a CFRB, there's some Batman there.
I have to admit, how did I not think you were Batman, considering that you live the Playboy life?
I try.
Right? Oh, you totally do. Matt, you're the only guy I know who goes to events.
Yeah.
Most of us go out. You go to events.
By the way, guess who's finally on the National Club Wine Committee? The hardest committee to get into the National Club.
Wait a minute. Let me cycle through all the options in my mind. Is it you, Matt?
No, it's John Torrey.
Oh, really?
No, it's me.
But the fact it could go either way. Once again, Matthew Kaws, the event king. Speaking of criticizing people, Matt came up with a big question this week that I really like, and it kind of goes back to a Twitter argument he and I had, once again, this one about the NBA final.
Yeah.
And you were saying that you found it not very compelling, that you were let down and disappointed by the playoffs.
Yeah.
I made the argument that historically this was a fascinating one. It may not have been a fun final, but it was impactful and compelling because of all the storylines that spin out.
It'll be impactful 20 years from now. Just not on June in 2017.
But the broader question that comes out of it is not who's right or wrong or why I'm right and Matt's wrong about the NBA final.
Vice versa.
Yeah, it's not that at all. It's not about Matt's erroneous position versus my correct one.
Yes.
It comes down to, why are we always so critical? And not just us. Like, why is everybody so critical? Like, we love sports.
Mm-hmm.
We gravitate towards it.
Yep.
We introduce it into our lives, even though it plays no practical function. We don't get paid to do it. We pay to enjoy it.
Yes.
But all we do, it seems, is bitch and bitch and bitch about it. So the big question this week, why do we criticize the sports we love so much?
The first, you know, and by the way, just a couple of examples. Just, the amount of time off between games or reviews for icing or the Sens crowd is too small or Nashville fans. Let's see if it's sustainable and super teams and Bettman giving out the trophy. And I think it comes down to because we love it.
Mm-hmm.
Because you treat often you treat a stranger sometimes better than your own family. And I think it becomes because we love it and we've invested so much time emotionally and financially and just time that it leads to us always going to be bitching and complaining.
Is that because of a sense of ownership, though? Is it because we put so much into it that we feel we've earned the right? The way you can hate your family and love them at the same time is the way you can hate and love sports at the same time?
Yeah.
Is that what you're getting at?
Yeah.
I kind of see that. I would take it in a little slightly different direction, though. This idea of how much we dedicate to it is part of loving sports is the act of criticism. It is a safe place in which you can be angry and get all that anger out of your system. I remember my cousin, who's a carpenter, he was remarking that these guys he worked with for like a couple of years would come to work every day. And they've been doing the same job for 30 years together every day and found a way to disagree what the right way to do the job was every day. And at some point, there's only so many ways to nail a nail into a board. They just like getting on each other's case. So don't you think it's just that it's fun to gripe?
Yes. Yeah, absolutely. And it could just be as simple as that. And to add to what you said, it's easier to complain about sports because the repercussions aren't the same as if you complain about taxes or if you complain about, Trump's not that bad or, you know, whatever you do. When you complain about those things, it raises the stakes.
It's like that Simpsons line where Homer pulls Lisa over onto his lap and says, remember that time when Daddy hit the referee with the whiskey bottle?
Yeah.
Remember that time?
Yeah.
Yeah, it was like that. So sure, yes, it's a place where you can let your anger out. And I actually think that's a really safe, healthy thing.
It allows irrational emotion without the repercussions.
And you've always maintained that sports should be irrational. As much as you enjoy analytics and as much as you enjoy pursuing history and trying to understand why things happen, you have always had a safe space in your heart for people who just want to be irrational.
If you want to be irrational, that's fine. I'm not going to be that all the time because I like, you know, a little...
You're pretty irrational sometimes.
Of course.
When it comes to the New York Giants, you're pretty irrational.
Oh, absolutely. And I embrace that. I don't want just one slice of pie. I want to try a little bit of all the pie.
I got a great story for you. Okay, so when we used to work on Off the Record, Maddie and I, Jesse Palmer was with TSN, and he came by the studio one time to say hi to Landsberg because they were pals. And so we're hanging out in the clubhouse for OTR, and Maddie has a game, I guess, what would you call it, like a replica helmet?
A replica New York Giants helmet someone bought for me years ago.
Right, and it sat on his desk. And Jesse Palmer, you have to understand, Matt hated him as a quarterback. He hated him at the University of Florida.
He stunk.
And he hated him as a New York Giants backup.
Yep.
So he was one of those irrational sports hates that we occasionally develop in our lives.
Yep.
So Jesse Palmer walks over to Matt's desk and says, oh, hey, a Giants helmet. Do you want me to sign it? And your answer was?
Nope. Now, I was... I was polite. I said to him, no, we're going to use this for the intro. And then I walked off, which is actually not a reason. There's no reason why he couldn't have signed it, but I did not want him signing that helmet.
This is 100% true that Matt never said no to. There's only two ideas that Matt ever said no to on Macko and Kaws. And Matt was like the ultimate yes guy. We'll try it. I don't even know if it's going to work, but we'll try it.
Sure.
Ultimate teammate. There were two ideas. One was I proposed we do a week called Life Swap,
yep,
where I live Matt's life and he lives mine for 1 week.
Bleep that.
And then we report at the end of it what it was like. Mm-hmm. So I go to events, mm-hmm, and you go to my daughter's barbecue tonight at St. Vincent Catholic School.
I love to go to a barbecue, but I don't want to have to take care of your child all day and deny myself the ability to have a nap.
So she shut down Life Swap. And the other one was I said, we're going to book Ron Dane.
A former New York Giants running back, first round pick, who I hated.
From the Wisconsin Badgers. Hated him then.
Fat, horrible running back.
Matt hated him so much, actually. He would go to Wikipedia and constantly edit into Ron Dane's account things about lasagna.
Yes, that he would have plates of lasagna until finally they would always edit it. So I went to the lasagna Wikipedia page and said, Ron Dane eats 3 bowls of this every morning for breakfast.
So Matt basically got put on the CSIS watch list for Wikipedia.
Yeah.
We were, from your computer, you weren't allowed to edit Ron Dane anymore.
Yeah.
I still think we should bring back that Wikipedia bit where we just alter people's entries. If they're going to give the public access, they deserve what they get.
Well, the key is how long will it stay up? It's like riding a bull. You know, bucking Bronco, you know, can you stay on for 7 seconds? How long can you edit someone's Wikipedia page without being like slanderous or you know, swearing or things like that? Just good fun. And how long does it stay up before one of the Wikipedia police takes it down?
I have another thought about this I want to get to. But yeah, before I do, I just want to say the time is not right now. But on the last pod episode of Macro and Cause, whenever it is, like a year's time, 10 years time, whenever it is, mm-hmm, I promised to tell the story of Matt's heckling when he and I went to go watch the Knicks and the Raptors.
Yes.
First round of the playoffs. I can't remember which year it was.
It was
2004?
No, it was earlier than that. It was like 2000, 2001.
Yeah, you're right. That's what it was. That's what it would have been. But his heckling, mm-hmm, was so bad, he actually got a player to leave the court and he never checked back in. This is a truth, but I'm not going to say it.
Yeah.
For the last ever episode, I will tell the story of what Matt actually said.
I just remember George Strombopoulos was also shocked when you told him that story.
Everybody's shocked, Matt. You're a wonderful human, except this one time.
I did not swear.
It's like the thing that Bill Murray whispers into the ear of Scarlett Johansson at the end of Lost in Translation. Mm. Nobody is allowed to know. This must remain a mystery.
It's the Pulp Fiction briefcase.
Exactly. So here's what I wanted to say, though, about criticism. What I really noticed that's interesting is, like, unlike the carpenters who argue about how to hammer a nail, mm-hmm, for 30 years, it used to be that sports complaints were about the game itself. The Monday morning quarterback. This coach is an idiot. This player can't play. That decision making was terrible.
Yeah.
What's really evolved over the past few years is that we don't criticize a game. We criticize the game.
Yeah.
That there's become this macro level where we don't break down, you know, here's the idiotic things that Dave Nonis or Brian Burke did in their time. We do that, but we're just as happy to talk about why hockey doesn't work and why the NHL makes so many bad decisions. And for that, you know what? I blame Entertainment Tonight.
Really?
I do. I think Entertainment Tonight is one of the most important TV shows ever made in that it represented a sea change in how we consume things. Before Entertainment Tonight, did anyone really care how much money a movie made?
No.
Did anyone really care about the business?
No.
No. But you.
I mean, unless the real insiders that got, you know, Hollywood Reporter. No, not for the masses.
Right, but somehow along the line, the inside became the outside, and we all became consumers of what the business of movies were. And it changed the way we look at things. So advanced reviews of stuff, like, we all pursue it in a much different way. And that was basically what Entertainment Tonight did, is it turned us all into amateur experts when it came to movies. I feel the same way right now about sports, in that we have so much access to how the sausage is made that it's impossible not to criticize it, that we understand caps and lockouts and
escrow
and all these horrible things that do you remember how people responded to the first lockout back, I guess it would have been in 94?
I'm trying to remember 90. Was it just, I mean, not the same level of anger as it was.
No, it was more confusion.
Yeah.
Like, there was anger, yes, but there was, by now there's almost this de facto rollout plan for whenever there's a stoppage in sports. We know exactly how it's going to play out. We know exactly what the issues are. Mm-hmm. We are so much more attuned to the rhythms, the biorhythms of the sports world, that it's impossible not to criticize the game because we actually watch the game and care about the game, not as just our team, but how leagues are run.
I guess owners and commissioners would actually be more worried if we didn't complain. But, you know, oh, there's so much time off between games. I used to complain about that. Now I'm like, no, if it means players are healthier, we get a better product. Why is Bettman giving out the trophy? I love the booing. You know, oh, why is the game not working in this market? Who gives a bleep? How does it affect you?
Well, you make a really good point, Matt, and I think it's an important distinction. You talk about players getting healthier, that sometimes it looks like complaining, but it's actually criticizing. And there is a difference between the two. Like, you can complain about how long it takes for an NBA final to actually be finished. You can complain about it.
Longer than the Olympics.
Right.
But in some cases, there was a game one to a game seven, that's a longer period than the Summer
Olympics.
That's
just a crazy thought. So that's a complaint. But a criticism, say, of the concussion policy of the NFL, that's not complaining. Where you say that, you know, you have to do something to take spearing or head-to-head hits out of the game.
No, that's
like,
different.
That's criticism, and it's educated criticism. And I think there's so much more of that in sports that it feels like people are just whining and bitching and complaining, but actually they're educated consumers who are aware of these bigger issues.
Oh, yeah, no. The educated criticism is good, but the, oh, I can't stand the new third row jersey. Ah, who gives? You know, who gives a bleep? But we're always going to do it. We're always going to find something, especially with it seems of the NHL, to complain about it.
The NHL is an interesting example, too, because we as Canadians are always shocked when we find out that we're not as different from the Americans as we think we are.
Mm-hmm.
Like, the Americans can raise a stink about a lot of stuff, but man, Canadians can be insufferable on the topic of hockey.
Oh, God, yeah.
It is really, like, you and I, having done sports radio, how many times have you been called an idiot because you like one player instead of another?
It's a pretty consistent basis, being called an idiot. It's funny, there is actually a snobby thing among, and I get it, but for Canadians, about how we view hockey versus Americans. Like, oh, look at those Americans with their hockey. Tut, tut, tut. Go on your way.
Even though the Nashville crowd was fantastic, and they had, what did they have, like 60,000 plus out in the streets?
And then that became a fight about, oh, that's not sustainable. And where were these before? And Nashville's not a hockey town. And then other people were criticizing the people criticizing the criticism.
Actually, Nashville fans kind of reminded me of Raptors fans for what it was worth. That whole thing reminded me of Jurassic Park. And that idea of this team that you followed, but they haven't had a ton of success. Now they've hit that kind of tipping point, and they find themselves in the seat of success. And so people get into it.
We didn't criticize
ourselves in Toronto for being bad Raptors fans.
No.
We were great. But there is this kind of presumption, and it's because, and we've said this before, and I will maintain this, Canadians are insufferable on the point of thinking that we are the self-appointed custodians of the game.
Well, we kind of are.
No, we're not. Come on. You know what? They love it in Latvia as much as we love it in Canada.
They do, but I'll say this. We're not the custodians, but Canada is the most important thing to the NHL.
We are the best at it. We are not the most important thing. Today we may be, but if the Americans...
No, I'm saying today.
If the Americans decided they wanted to be the best thing at hockey within a generation, they would be the best in hockey.
Of course, but right now, today, most of the money-making teams are in Canada. Still, most of the players are like 50%, whatever the players are, from Canada. So today we are the most important custodians, in a debate for another day.
That's so funny, Matt. I can see on your mind you want to move past this. I can see
if you want, we can continue on this.
No. I'm thinking, do you have something in mind? Are we hitting almost that hour point?
Well, it just depends. We are at 58 minutes.
Oh, we're never going to make it.
Did you want to
We still have over. The biggest announcement in Macklin-Cost history.
Let's go over. It doesn't matter. This will be split up into two parts. As you're listening to this, this is now a two-part.
We're never going to make it.
It's fine.
Volume 1 and Volume 2.
Volume 1.
We are the Kill Bill of podcasts.
Volume 2. Then final thought on that. There's no such thing as anyone is a custodian for a sport. That term feels a little pretentious. But there's nothing wrong with saying, yeah, if you want to go, what country is the most important for hockey? For the NHL. For not hockey, but for the NHL, it's Canada. Maybe that changes in 20 years. But as of June 15th, 2017, it's Canada.
Toronto is the greatest hockey city in the world. I can make that claim fairly confidently. And it's not because of Leafs fans. It's because of the GTHL. It's because of how much grassroots hockey is here. How many professional players wind up coming out of the Toronto system.
Mm-hmm.
This is clearly the epicenter of hockey in the world right now. And this is, you know, over the past 10 years, let's say.
Yep.
That still doesn't give us the right, though, necessarily, to criticize. No. Observe and criticize, yes. Complain, no. Complaining is boring. Criticizing is productive.
I would agree.
We're good with that?
Yeah.
Okay.
What's the big announcement?
The big announcement is this is the year I get into the CFL.
Oh, that's right.
The biggest announcement in the history of Macklin Cause. Now, Matt, do you want to put a little context to this?
Yeah.
Because that seems probably like a very throwaway comment.
Every year when we were working at Off the Record, Bob would proclaim, this is the year I'm going to get in the CFL and into the Argonauts. And much like a lot of Bob's diets in the past, it seemed like a great idea, and you saw it early on, but it would soon go away. And in week 9, I'd be like, Bob, what's the record for the Argonauts? And you would have no idea.
No idea.
You wouldn't even be close.
Didn't care.
For people who don't know, I write for the CFL. I'm actually working on two columns right now for CFL.ca. So I have put together 25 questions for Bob Mackowitz, CFL related. It's not Argo related. There are Argo questions here, but this is about the entire CFL. And Bob's homework is to come back with the right answers for these 25 questions.
See, here's how I envisioned this, because I asked Matt to prepare a little take-home exam for me.
I can ask you them now.
The only way that I can prove that I'm getting into the CFL is if we take a baseline understanding of my knowledge now.
Okay.
Right? So this is almost like the combines, where I'm going to go through a series of events.
You want some baseline questions?
And we're going to but we won't do it now. Or do you want to do it now?
Let's
just do it now. Okay, let's do it. Matt is going to give me our CFL baseline understanding test. Okay, go.
Who is the MOP? Who is the most outstanding player in the CFL?
Wait, I know this one. Quarterback. Dave Dickinson.
Dave Dickinson is a coach. That would be Bo Levi Mitchell, quarterback.
That's not what I was going to say. Calgary. All right.
Who won the Grey Cup?
Calgary.
The Ottawa Red Blacks.
Damn it. Calgary was in the game, though, right?
They were, yeah.
Okay, this is going bad.
This is going really bad. Okay, that's your knowledge. You didn't know who won the Grey Cup. In a game that went into overtime, that was one of the greatest Grey Cups of all time.
It was Ottawa, right?
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah.
I said that. I said that two seconds ago.
No, I'm just double-checking. For some reason, anything CFL doesn't stick in my head.
I guess I can't ask you who won the who scored the game-winning touchdown, who's now a member of the Montreal Alouettes.
Dave Dickinson.
There you go. That was good. An Argo question.
Okay, I'm going to get it.
Okay, name the linebacker that was released, I'm even going to give his former team, released by Montreal, who's now with the Argonauts. And this guy has been an all-star, not just Eastern Conference, but an all-CFL player. He's got a crazy name. First name is the name of an animal. He's got
Cheetah Jones.
Bear Woods.
Damn it.
Bear Woods. Okay, so
you didn't like Cheetah's game?
All right, let me ask you a question. Bob, what do you know about the CFL? Why am I asking you? Okay, name me a player in the CFL that we have not yet discussed.
Ricky Ray.
Yes. And what team does Ricky Ray play for?
For my Toronto Argonauts, wise guy.
Okay. Where did he come from before?
Edmonton.
All right. Okay. So we're established.
We've interviewed him, though.
Yes.
We've interviewed him a few times. So yes. Ricky Ray, I know a bit about.
Okay.
You know, Matt.
One last question.
Really?
Name one non-quarterback in the CFL.
Chris Getzlaff.
Well, you get it.
Am I right?
Yeah.
Yeah, because he's related to Ryan Getzlaff. So yeah. I've seen features on him.
Yeah.
Okay. Right. No. I know the game.
Congratulations, Brian Williams. You named a guy because his brother
is in the NHL. All right. So I think it's safe to say we have established that.
You got a lot of Googling.
I got a lot of work to do. So I don't even need to take this home. I can if you'd like.
I've already emailed you the questions.
All right, but here's the deal. I'm not going to Google it. I'm just going to see how many questions were there. 20, 25?
There's 25. You're not going to get any right.
Really?
No.
Okay, so this is homework?
Yeah.
Oh, that sounds like a drag.
Yeah.
Okay, I'll do it, though, because this is the year, Matt, that I get into the CFL.
Okay.
I love the fact that there are cheap tickets.
Mm-hmm.
I love the fact that BMO is just down the street from my beloved Parkdale.
And it's gorgeous to go watch a game there.
It really is. I don't know what it is about the CFL, though. You know, we watch hockey, baseball, NFL, like any number of sports, and this stuff just sticks in your head. Mm-hmm. It's almost like ink on a white rug. It just gets right in there and never comes out. But for the CFL, I am a total sieve.
I can tell you why.
Why? Because I don't care?
No. I mean, well, that might be part of it, but like the player movement in the CFL is so much greater than in any other sport. Everyone is always moving teams. Also, guys come here at 25, 26, so it's shorter careers. Then the really great ones are going back to the NFL. You know, it's the same thing with the coaches. So that's the why you rarely have a player on the same team for more than, say, 3 or 4 years. And that's one of the reasons why you don't have the porridge sticking to the ribs.
You will see by this year's Grey Cup. Where's it being played this year, by the way? Your CFL.com's Matt Cause. You should know this.
Yes, CFL.ca.
Sorry.
Get the website right.
Whatever. It's an international game, Matt.
Yeah. It's in Ottawa.
It's in Ottawa?
Mm-hmm.
You and I are going to go to the game?
Mm-hmm.
And I'm going to know everything about that game.
All right.
You're going to see. Okay, let's make that deal right now. You and I are going to go to the Grey Cup, okay? It's in Ottawa. Shake my hand, Matt.
All right.
Matt, you're right for the website. Can't they get you a press pass?
I like staying home.
You're the worst. I actually went to a Grey Cup in Ottawa once, the one that Toronto won. Mm-hmm. They beat, if I remember correctly, it was Calgary.
The last time the Argonauts won the Grey Cup against Calgary, that was in Toronto.
Was it?
Yeah.
Okay, no.
We should move on.
Did they play someone else? Maybe it was BC.
Let's just move on.
Did they beat BC?
No.
I was there.
Oh, yeah. Yes, they did beat the BC Lions.
Yeah. Yeah, you see?
Yeah, I'm sorry.
Right. I think Dave Dickinson was in that game. Actually, I really do. I think you really
was Dave Dickinson, yes.
All right, so biggest announcement is I'm going to learn everything there is about the CFL, including who was at the Grey Cup that I went to.
This is the saddest display of CFL.
It's pretty bad. I've got nothing left for the show today, Maddie. How about you?
You got one last thing.
What's that?
That's how are we ending the show?
Well, I'm not going to tell you. That's going to be an Easter egg. We'll have to say goodbye, and then you'll find out. So do next week, what are we going to be talking about?
Next week on the show, I think it's going to be obviously still with the Leafs. It's actually one topic that's going to be fun for next week.
Okay.
When the expansion draft list is released, because that's going to be awkward, passive aggressive. That's going to be awesome. The expansion draft means nothing for Leaf fans, but the awkwardness of the names being out there means a lot. We're going to talk about that. The Blue Jays, they don't have much against the AL East in the next little bit. Stink against them. They're 12 and 19. But I think it's going to be Jays and NHL expansion draft awkward moments.
And I think we're going to heat up some Raptors talk again, because with the draft coming up, there could be some moves. It feels like the free agency period is going to be the most interesting, because we'll see if they retain Kyle Lowry. But if they are active at the draft, perhaps that's an indication that they don't think they're going to retain Kyle Lowry.
Yep.
So we'll probably get into some Raptor stuff too. Plus, at some point, I guess next week we'll do our Mummy review.
Oh, yeah.
We were supposed to do an emergency pod review of the Mummy, and we didn't get to it yet. You're going up to your cottage, right?
No. I'm around. I could go because I was going to the cottage, but
Do you want to go tomorrow?
I
can't go tomorrow.
I'm filling in for Jim Richards on 1010. So I'm doing that tomorrow from 12
the legend,
to 4.
The great
yes.
one. Yeah. Jim Burley Richards. Mm-hmm. Jim Burley is the funniest, smartest guy in radio. You have tough shoes to fill, Maddie.
It's true. Thank tough you for shoes that. To Thank fill. You.
That's all right. That's all I got for this week, Maddie.
All right. That's all I got as well. Bye, Bob.
Bye, Matt. Chica.